All right. No need to say I'm locked in because I'm locked in.
Nice.
I'm going to fade out. Nice slow fade out.
We'll take it.
GloucesterCast 317.
Whoa.
317. First, the on the eve of the polar vortex. I heard the polar vortex is coming.
Yeah.
What am I hearing? Some music.
You're hearing Chris's phone.
Why? Why are you doing this to me?
Because I'm working here.
317
on the 17th. On 117, I'm back to work. Yeah. So we're going to be doing multiple podcasts a week going for the next 2 weeks.
I'll try.
I hope our pay is going to increase.
Reflected.
Everybody, that's going to be reflected in your pay.
Kim just spit out.
Kim just spit out her.
Her
Kim just spit out her vodka.
No, folks, it's water, that's was
vodka.
Such a funny
Don't
joke
lie.
That we get made. That I had
to, wow.
I guffawed. No, it did not go up my nose, and
you
it is not vodka.
I'll expose you. If you make me sniff that, I will expose you.
You don't want to sniff it now because that's my cold germs.
Oh, no,
in
I don't
want
to sniff it. Adam was with us from Adam Cooker. I got it right this time.
There you go.
First time I've got it right in all the times he's been here. I always say Adam Orlando because there's a million Adam Orlandos. There's only one Adam Cookaroo of consequence in my life, and he is here because I asked him to come here because we have had probably 7 to 10 people email or contact me through the blog asking how they can help the Coast Guard, the local Coast Guard, due to the federal government shutdown. And I saw Safatio and you had posted photos from a meeting that you had with some of the, you know, great people from our community. And I'm assuming that you were coming to talk, got together to talk about how we can help.
Sure. So on the same lines, Joe, a lot of the community's been asking, what can they do to help our Coast Guard during this time? And on Tuesday, January 15th was the first time the Coast Guard did not get paid. They did not get their paycheck. They're actively working, but right now they're not getting paid. So we had to address a couple issues in the mayor's office with Representative Ferranti, Senator Tarr, a member of Congressman Moulton's office, Harbor Master's office, Coast Guard Station Gloucester, and our veterans organization.
Julie
LaFontaine and David Holden from housing to discuss you know, what people can do and what people shouldn't do to help the Coast Guard. A lot of people were thinking, you know, can I bring them some food down? Can we drop off food to the station? And that's not what they need. As far as the active duty men and women on the station, they still have food and they're still operating. Who's really being affected right now is the families of those Coast Guard members. So that's really where they need support. There's been some question on our harbors and our safety for our boats during the shutdown. Is the Coast Guard still working at full capacity, or are they kind of slowing down because they're not getting paid? And these are active duties members of our military. They're dedicated and proud to serve our country, and you know, they haven't slacked. They're working 100%. They're just not getting paid. But on the psychological note, because they're not getting paid, these issues are in the back of their mind and may be affecting their work at some point, where, you know, can I feed my family? Am I going to have gas to get to work? What about these bills that I'm not able to pay?
What about mortgages?
Yeah. What about the gas bill? What about the mortgage?
Right.
You know, what about diapers? So this is really the first step that we've looked at. So Julie LaFontaine has set up a avenue for these families to get food from Open Door. And if anyone wanted to support that effort, food can be brought over to the Open Door,
or cash
donations can be brought over to Open Door. Please don't bring any food down to the Coast Guard. They're just not equipped to handle that.
I was actually considering making a brisket and bringing it down there.
Oh, definitely.
I know they would have enjoyed it, but I read this. I'm like, oh, that's not, that's probably, that they can't
they
take
can't
the food.
Take it.
Yeah.
They can't take it.
Right.
You run into individual allergies and specific eating habits.
Right. Everything
is just not the way that we can effectively help them. Cash donations can be made through the Gloucester Fund, and brought to one of our veterans organizations, either our office at 12 Emerson Avenue or the AMVETS on Prospect Street, the VFW on Eastern Avenue, or the American Legion on Washington Street. And those checks can be made out to the Gloucester Fund and in the memo section, United States Coast Guard. Really what they're looking for is gift cards that can again be brought to those same locations, gift cards to Market Basket, gift cards to Shaw's, Stop and Shop, Walgreens, CVS,
Target,
yeah. Walmart, gas stations. Again, to kind of supplement what they're doing. As I said before, they're looking at their families and the needs of their families, getting back and forth to work.
So there's a way to earmark these by dropping them off, and you can say, we'd like this to go toward the Coast Guard?
Correct. So if you drop one of these gift cards off or a check off to one of our veterans organizations and let them know it's going to go from us or to the Harbor Master's office, and the Harbor Master's office is going to give it to Coast Guard Station Gloucester, who will divvy it out to their members on a need basis, on what they need, because they know their members the best, and they can give them what they need to get them through this.
When you said some of the vet organizations, what in particular would you say, people are listening, and they're saying, hey, listen, I'm going to go out today, who can I go to? What are you suggesting?
So they can go out and get those Walgreens gift cards and everything, and then drop them off at our office on Emerson Avenue.
Okay.
Or at the VFW post on Eastern Avenue,
right,
heading towards Rockport, the American Legion on Washington Street,
beautiful,
or the AMVETS post on Prospect Street.
Okay.
Any of those posts are accepting those donations.
Is the Harbor Master's office accepting them?
I believe they are, because they're in and out and they're still working.
Okay, yeah.
It'd be better off dropping them off of one of these posts.
That are definitely manned, yeah.
And we will contact the Harbor Master's office with these cards and trucks as they come in.
Right.
To meet, and then they can distribute them.
That's fantastic. You know, it was very, I was kind of taken aback with how many people on their own, when they heard about the shutdown, like were contacting us. And like, what can we do? What can we do? I haven't had that kind of outpouring response in a long time.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times the Coast Guard people, a lot of the Coast Guard people aren't like local guys.
Mm-hmm.
And they come here and they think that there's this big animosity with the fishermen, like the fishermen don't like them.
That.
But the fishermen really, they don't dislike the Coast Guard. They don't dislike the environmental police either.
No.
But I think that these guys come here with a thing in their head like, oh, you know, these guys are, you know, they have a picture in their head of these rough and tumble, like, you know, guys that are in a bar room that are just talking about, oh, the damn Coast Guard. But really, they have nothing but respect for them.
Yeah,
it's shown because in the office and everybody's like, geez, these poor guys, you know, what can we do?
So
we have an amazing community.
Yeah.
It's always willing to support in all these different efforts.
Yeah.
And we had so many people in this room talking about different levels of crisis.
And not just crisis, too, like everyday things, like when we have clean Gloucester, mm-hmm. days, the Coast Guard is out there helping as well. I mean the incredible emergency rescue efforts that they do, but also these just day-to-day Gloucester things.
Yeah.
And also supporting, like, the I know the Fishermen's Wives has like safety days and they do them at the Coast Guard station, I mean, just awesome.
They do boater safety day in June.
Yeah.
You know, they're involved with the Fishermen's Memorial. Ensure that they're there providing color guard and support. You know, they're very active in our community. You know, they're cleaning the harbors. They're just really deserving of our support. And it's great to see a community and live in a community that is so anxious to give back when someone else needs it.
Great.
And when they don't need it,
I think it's absolutely great that we can, you know, we've always wanted to say thank you. But here's an opportunity to say thank you by helping their families.
Yeah.
Which is what they're asking for.
Great.
And how you opened up. It was great.
Good point.
Great.
Well, thank you for coming, Adam.
Thank you.
Anything you want to follow up with?
I don't want to end on a negative note. So I'll tell you a little small good story that we had yesterday. So we had a family, the Rutuskas family. Their father, Jason Rutuskas, was in the Navy. He was in Africa for a whole year, deployed and away from his family. He came home yesterday, and he surprised his kids at Veterans Memorial School.
Oh, wow.
So...
Is there a video of that coming
There is a video on Facebook.
Ooh. Oh, we got to find that. Wonderful. That is going to be...
They make me cry.
So, yeah. Just to see, you know, his wife, Kristen, and their two sons, Caden and Jackson, just a surprise, and to have their dad back home, it was great. Nice. It was great for our community.
Nice. What was the name? The soldier's name?
Jason.
Jason what?
Rutuscus.
Rutuscus, okay.
Somebody better spell
that. I can do it, yeah.
No, I want to make sure. I'm gonna grab that Facebook video and put it on the blog because those are the
trying
type
to make
of,
us all cry. Is that
those
it?
Are fantastic. No.
R-U-T.
R-U-T.
K-A-U.
K-A-U.
S-K-A-S.
All right. Awesome.
So they had, his son was, his oldest son was in a second grade class. So they both came in. Their youngest son, I think, is in preschool. Caden and,
no idea.
Their dad walked in. And, they just, it's nice for the family, to be back with a wonderful family.
Welcome and just home, Jason.
Yeah, really. So that's a good note that I can leave off on that, this wonderful Gloucester family is back together and reunited after a long deployment.
Great.
We're very happy for them. So.
Adam, thank you so much for coming in. Appreciate it.
That's noisy.
Dave McKechnie just
this
walked
is my
in.
Diet.
Well,
what is that?
Is this on the diet?
I thought you can't eat nuts.
And they're not nuts. It's cereal. It's some kind of fake cereal.
That's not going to be good for you. I thought it was keto.
Hey, I'm down 11 pounds in just about 11 days. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know what the impetus
eat
for
like
him
a
go-
bird.
Do you know what the impetus was for him going on this diet? We went to the Bruins game, and before the Bruins game, we went to Massimino's.
Oh.
And he shows up in his suit, his overcoat, and he had a dress shirt on. He took his overcoat off, and the shirt looked like a sausage casing that if it got near any sharp objects, like shit was going to go flying everywhere. The guys across the table from him were shielding their eyes because they thought that the button was going to fly off and take his eyes out. And ever since then, he's been on this psychotic diet. He's not drinking.
Yeah.
He's like no bread, like one of those type of deals.
No sex.
What a shame.
Oh, that's...
Yeah, that's the tough pie.
That's the
why is that type of diet?
Sex?
I would think
does something to your metabolism and, I don't know, they
increases
say,
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Makes him hungry afterwards.
It would burn calories.
Well, it makes him hungry
It
afterwards.
Makes me smoke a cigarette after, and smoking is bad for me.
I can't tell what you're saying. I have no idea.
We have Dave McKechnie with us. Dave McKechnie of Beauport Financial fame.
Nice.
Dave is going to talk. He's going to embarrass me and tell me, he's going to shame me that I've never gone to the Beauport Financial Christmas party.
That's right. Been invited every year.
Every year.
10 straight years. Doesn't show up. Doesn't bring any family or anything.
He's so busy at that time of year.
I told him that. Yeah.
It's like the worst time. Possibly.
It's like literally the worst
time. Stop staying in enough for him, Kim.
Thank you, Kim. She's got my back.
Yeah. 5 to 7 free food.
Yeah,
you.
No, they put on a big
spread. I'll take his place. No, just
yeah, yeah, Kim and I will go.
Yeah, we'll go. I'll take his place.
Well, the reason I have Dave in here is because, I love to do testimony. The only things that we pimp on the blog continuously are things that we really stand behind.
Right.
And that's how we have our credibility. So when I was younger, we had had... financial advisors that after a while you figure out that they really didn't have your best interests in mind. Chris is fucking around with his phone again. He can't help himself. He's got the notifications. You can't shut the goddamn thing off.
I just got an email. Yeah, I know. I'm trying to.
I got distracted. Anyway, so for years we had had we had signed up for these things and then enough is enough. We had enough. And through our accountant, our longtime accountant, he had recommended, go see Dave McKechnie at Beauport Financial. And from Jim Perry, and everything that he has suggested to us has been a winner. And so we went and talked to Dave. And so every year, Dave contacts Dave or Kevin, his partner, contact us, have us in, go over everything, and they really analyze your portfolio. I feel like a lot of places, that's all they do, that's all they're interested in, is collecting your assets and getting them under their umbrella. And then after that, they really,
you don't hear from them.
Like those years that went by, I didn't hear from them. Performance all over the place,
right.
Ups and downs. And to Dave's credit and his team that he has assembled, I feel like I'm in, we have never felt like we're in better hands. So if anyone is in a situation where they don't feel comfortable at all, you know, 100% comfortable, because I feel 100% comfortable, with who is managing their money, I would highly suggest talking to Dave. Dave, how long have you been in the business?
33 years. I can't believe it. It's very simple why I take care of you, because I always felt when I walked down to the wharf that, you know, if I didn't do a good job for you and act as a fiduciary, which means, you know, acting in your best interest, I'd be on the back of a lobster boat strapped with a couple of cinder blocks right out by, you know, dog bar breakwater, and be thrown off the edge. So it's pretty simple.
Get whacked.
Get whacked. So,
this is a podcast with value added. That's really
right.
Good.
So I manage your money out of fear. something bad could go wrong. And
jeez,
as you keep adding family members to me, the fear for me, you know, the pressure grows. So,
yeah, we need to go and follow me.
It's been a great run, you know, in Cape Ann and Gloucester. And one of the things, you know, if you ever do come to our Christmas party, one of the things that we do is we donate 10% of our profit back to the community every year. And it's a big... an outpouring of a lot of nonprofits, and our clients actually write grants each year to benefit the nonprofit that they're involved in, and the client the nonprofit head shows up at the event, and we literally, you know, pass them out checks, and the checks are secret. We don't make a big deal out of the dollar amounts, but you know, we listened to Adam here earlier. It's, you know, Gloucester is a unique place with some incredible nonprofits, you know, Pathways, the YMCA, Open Door, Action, go on and on and on. And it really makes us unique. And we're, you know, I'm born and raised here in Gloucester, so I feel the fabric of Cape Ann.
But when you go in and you have these meetings and initially, and you tell, you know, they really take you under their wing, and they're not trying to invest in these high, you know how the VIG, what do we call it?
The hedge funds.
The VIX,
I'm talking about VIG, like the cost, you know, you use a lot of index funds.
Right.
Which are low cost to get in and out of, and while he's managing, there's there had been money managers in the past that would do a lot of trading and would incur a lot of costs. Like Dave's, the way they work there is they put together a balanced portfolio that will serve you extremely well with minimal exposure to risk.
Because you're in it for the long run, right?
But they're also locals, and they're in the community, and they have to walk. They have to run into these people in the grocery store and everything else.
Mm-hmm. We do,
right?
Demoulas is a tough place sometimes. Yeah, not so much to meet and greet clients. It's wonderful, but it takes maybe 2 hours to sometimes do the grocery shopping.
I'm sure.
You know, to stop and see everybody and so forth. But that's also part of what's great about being here and being connected to the community. And you know, these indexes are part of something that's very unique for us. We've been doing it for 16 years. We're one of the early adopters of these things called exchange-traded funds. And their claim to fame is that, you know, you're always going to get the market returns. You're never going to get performance below the market. If you asset allocate the portfolio properly, you can do better than the market. And if you can keep your costs very, very low and your tax efficiency very, very high, that's a return to the client. It's hard sometimes to track it, like the before and after. Like, hey, your taxes were this before. Now your taxes 3-4 years later are this or Y. And But we've demonstrated that over the years. And in fact, if you pay less in taxes, you have more return in your pocket. And we keep our fees, you know, reasonable here on Cape Ann. So.
Yeah. Well, Jim Perry is, as our accountant down the wharf, is a very, I find like the older, established guys, like you can go to them and they really like, they don't give, the reason that they've been around so long is because they're giving good advice.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And they're honest. He used to work for the IRS, so you and I have in common. I mean, 33 years with Jim Perry for me, my entire working lifetime. He's starting to wind down and, bringing in a new, younger associate. So hopefully that'll go as well as the last 33 years has gone for you and I.
So what would you say to a young, a young family that is kind of, maybe they don't have a ton of assets yet. I mean, do you have a cutoff point where people have to have a certain amount to get it started with you guys at Beauport Financial?
Yes and no. If we're working with a family member, a young family, we want to bring them along. I'm a young firm. I'm the oldest of my entire crew at 57. So, we want to get, especially clients of ours, their family members, their kids, and so forth, involved. If a client refers us to a young family, we're certainly going to take care of them. And really, no amount is too small. It's the discipline of putting money away every month and not spending it, somewhere else, and getting set up on some kind of an automatic plan. And, employers do great jobs with 401ks and IRAs and retirement plans like that, where you can get automatic payroll deduction in your, for your savings with an employer. All of that's really important. Americans don't really save, and young people, because of these economic crises that have gone on, if you will, in 2001 and 2002, when they were born and just going, just getting going, and listening to the parents have angst over their investment portfolios, and then 2008 and 2009, and then just this recent little hiccup that we've had at the end of the year, it rattles people, and they have to, they lose confidence that this type of savings, owning corporations, owning businesses, you own a business here, you take risks from owning your business, but you're rewarded, for the risk that you take. It's the same thing whether you're owning Apple or Amazon or Procter & Gamble or Walmart, and you're owning pieces of companies. They ebb and flow over time, and we try to make this intangible investment tangible so you can touch it and feel it and understand what you own and understand the business cycle, that it goes up and down. This type of correction that we just had in the last few months, very normal. What was abnormal was 2016 and 17, where the stock market just kind of edged upward very, very, with very little risk in in the portfolios and very little volatility, and it got people a little bit complacent. And so this correction that's happened, I don't know if it's a recession coming or not. This could be another false alarm and we take another leg up and this economic expansion continues. Or it could be that, we do have a recession. Probably not as bad as the last one, but these are quite normal. And for a young person, to be getting started in dollar cost averaging into the market, sending money in every month is an awesome way to
The best thing I ever did at a young age was have money automatically deducted out of my checking account and deposited into certain mutual funds.
Right.
And then as I got older, I found out that you could take that a step further if you get the money and deposit it into index funds, there's a lot less friction costs. Mm-hmm. And Dave, so say you had, whatever you could afford at a young age, and by dollar cost average, what I have found is if you try to time the market, you're not good enough. You're psychologically not disciplined enough to time the market, like when the market is just absolutely getting demolished, to catch the very lows.
Right.
So if you just stay disciplined and have that money automatically deducted, you catch it all.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And if you do have some excess cash laying around and you see a 20% pullback, and you don't put it to work, I feel like you're insane.
Right.
Right?
Well, yeah. I mean, and that's why the discipline of going, you know, and doing it every month. But, you know, the stock market right after Christmas, you know, has been up 10%. And so the selling part of things when you get nervous or worried is easy. It's, you know, when are you going to get back in? And, you know, and so the market has corrected, you know, up 10% from its lows just a few weeks ago. And we're not good enough to time that situation either. What our goal is to make sure that, you know, all of our clients are prepared going into a correction in the market or an economic downturn so that they can weather the portfolio by owning some safer investments that will not be as volatile on the way down, and let everybody sleep at night, including us, so that the meetings at Demoulas are cordial and not acrimonious. You know, but our clients understand that, and you know, there's certainly some hand holding. We're working our tail off here. You know, as clients get their statements at the end of the year, it was, you know, kind of a nasty time to open up their Schwab statements. But, you know, then if I run them a report of where we are today, you know, so we're off like 5% over a 12-month, 2-week period of time.
After two years previous.
Not
of,
so bad.
Of,
2016 and 2017 being great, you know, returns. So,
based on your extensive analysis and research, what is the prediction for lobster commodities?
Lobster commodities. I think that the lack of kind of a claw on one of the lobsters could hurt the commodity pricing if the lobsters are still growing with both claws coming forward and they measure the device properly. I think commodity prices are in really good shape for you know, for Captain Joe and Sons. Yeah,
nice.
Should be good.
Good to hear.
Yeah.
Invest heavily.
Make sure you boil them though.
No, you have to. You have to shock them. If you live in what is it,
Sweden, Switzerland.
Show them the December statement.
They made it illegal.
Yeah.
To boil lobsters right from the get-go, you have to shock them.
Really?
To put them in a...
Shock them senseless. Right.
Before you can boil them.
Right. Yeah. Just you probably don't remember this. When I first met you, okay, I collected two lobsters. One was Herman 1 and the other one was Herman 2. And Herman 1 was caught on a dragger and it came in here. It was like 17 pounds. And I decided my best man at my wedding was turning 30. And I was going to goof on him pretty good. So you pack this lobster up. You didn't even know me as Beauport Financial at the time. Put it in a big, you know, styrofoam container. I drove it to Philadelphia and then found out that I couldn't put Herman in the pot. There wasn't a pot big enough. I brought a big pot. And poor Herman, the Ginzu knife came out and we had to dismember the two claws while the poor thing was alive. And boy, was that, I mean, that fed like six people over 2 days.
Yeah.
And then Herman 2 was brought up to Brookline, Massachusetts for my other buddy who turned 30, like about 3 months later. And I unleashed Herman, took the pegs out and everything and put him on the floor as my buddy came around the corner. And Herman was up there, you know, grabbing and wanting a piece of somebody. Scared the living, you know what, out of my friend.
Oh, boy.
But, awesome. You know, if you cook them right, you know, you don't overcook the bigger lobster.
Yeah, well, so what
they're
is
just,
the deal
they're
with
delicious.
That? With a giant lobster, how do they taste?
Well, that's, the myth is that they don't taste any good, but the reason that has come to be a myth is because people cook the shit out of them, so they overcook them.
Right, okay.
I forget what the right... Time is for the
I need to do that again.
do the guys ever bring super giant lobsters in? Like
there's
that?
Only certain guys that have the permits to bring in the big ones now. Those inshore guys can the lobsters that they're allowed to bring in are up to like 3.5 pounds.
And why is that they have
restrictions? It's one of the measures that the lobstermen themselves have self-imposed for sustainability reasons, and that's why our lobster industry is so healthy year in and year out.
That's
is because they don't, every time something comes along, they don't fight, you know, like
fight.
A fisherman, like every time there was some time a measure to cut back, the fishermen all railed against it.
Yeah.
until it was too, you know, then it was too late, and then they all.
Aren't the big lobsters the breeders?
So that's part of the reason why they don't take them is the big females, you know, tend to have a lot of eggs and stuff like that. So they throw those ones back.
These actually got grabbed by draggers. I mean, they're way too big for any.
Lobster,
you know, just,
they wouldn't
it was just kind of luck of and it would be brought in, but that was years ago, so I don't know if that's changed or not.
Yeah, it's changed.
Yeah, they throw them
back. There's most of them do, but there's some that still, there's only a handful of guys that have the offshore
permit
that fish in certain areas that can land those. It's a whole different animal from what we catch now.
Okay. I think you got to put one of those big ones on a grill.
Oh, God.
What's the lifespan of a lobster?
They could live up to 100 years, right?
They say, you know, there's questions that they if nothing gets to them, that they could live in infinity.
Indefinitely.
There's questions about that.
Yeah.
So there could be a, like a
200
a
year
3,000 pound lobster out there?
I don't know about the size, but the
age. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's they analyze lobsters, which is a cool thing with the the genome cluster.
GMGI.
Oh, that's right.
Good Morning Gloucester Institute over there on the Lodger Street.
The Gloucester Genomics.
Good Morning Gloucester Institute, Kim.
Gloucester Genomics Institute.
We should do a podcast from over there.
They would probably love to have us. Yeah. I still have not been in that building. Yeah. This is a shame. I wanted to go for the big art. They had
the art
with
John Sarkin
and the Jewish
Paul
guy.
Paul Gary Goldberg
had a show.
A show there.
Art show there just like last week, right?
Yeah, it was last week, and they.
Did you go?
No, I didn't go. But what's really cool is GMGI.
Good Morning Gloucester Institute.
is they're not purchasing artists' work, they're leasing it. So Tom used to do this at the. Cambridge Art Association, where you rent the artist's work, but they maintain ownership of it. So they're getting money for it, plus they own it, and so if somebody wants to buy it from them,
they can still sell it.
So, and after the exposure of being at the show, they'll probably sell
often
it.
Often sell.
So
That's a great concept.
It's a win-win for the artist in every way.
I told you the story about John Sarkin when I was in his studio. And there was the huge, the mackerel mural that was probably about 20 feet long.
Where was that headed?
It was on the wall, and I'm sitting there. And do you know John Sarkin?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So his studio in the West End is covered with pastel crayons, and like you can't take a step without stepping
ceiling.
Floor to ceiling.
Wall to wall. Stacked everywhere.
Bananas. Like so I'm sitting there having a conversation with him, and he's a very interesting guy. And this older lady walks in, and she says, "John, I want to buy the mackerel." And he goes, and she says, "I'll give you $15,000 for it." And he says, "No, it's $50,000." And she says, "John, I'll cut you a check right now. $15,000 for that." He goes, "My agent would kill me if I sold that.
Yeah.
It's gonna go for $50,000." He let $15,000 walk out the door. And this is, I mean, his work is wonderful work. But have you seen how quickly he does his like he's a frenetic, like
you
know, it's one of these
one
things. And he did not, and he left $15,000 on the table.
15 from 50 is pretty low ball. Maybe.
Right.
So well, yeah,
he's got to protect the value of his work.
Yeah, he's got to protect the value of his work, yeah. But it was, there you go.
Watching that happen, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, just sitting there and watching this transpire of like,
right.
What's going to happen? It's very interesting to me. Yeah, very, very cool. You have a lot of artwork in your office up in Blackburn Industrial Park.
Yeah, we have some, interesting, eclectic artwork, some from Lauren Doucette, and which is a great local artist here.
You could use a canvas or two from that artist Joey Shimatara. He does some great waterfront pieces.
Absolutely.
Just tease out.
Framing those photographs would be spectacular. So then we actually had a gentleman from White Elephant come by and out of the back of his van. We grabbed a bunch of old paintings and framed them up really nice. And if you look really closely at them, somebody had punched a hole through the canvas and ruined a beautiful painting. You have to look at it closely. Yes. Wow. So, you know, we have been some Heathcliff Slocum, I don't know, some guy I've never heard of. We got a couple of his paintings. My aunt Ellen, who, God rest her soul, passed away. A couple of her paintings, Ellen O'Malley.
Wasn't he a pitcher?
Heathcliff Slocum, I think, was a pitcher.
Yeah, no, it wasn't Heathcliff. It's Heathcliff somebody, you know. big writing, so.
Maybe he's an artist.
Hey, too. I wanted to put in, can I put in a couple of plugs? The snowy owl that I see all the time, a Good Morning Gloucester.
Both of them.
Okay, it's beautiful. Yeah. It's a beautiful owl. And then the birds that we all, like, fret about in the springtime that hatch down in... The piping plovers are wonderful. Okay, but I have
Are you pandering right now?
I have a family of osprey that are on the Anasquam River, and I pray that they come back for the third season in a row. My Aunt Eleanor's friend has got this stand out there right next to Gloucester Marina.
You know what,
they have had children every year.
I photographed that. I
haven't seen your photographs, but they need to be next spring when they come back. I have a telescope on them. It is the most beautiful thing every morning. This couple that takes care of these little babies that show up in June, and they feed them constantly all the way till the end of August, and then they teach them how to fly off the
what do you mean? Wait. The humans? The humans are teaching them how to fly?
No. Mom and dad.
Mom
and dad osprey.
Mom and dad.
Well, they mate for life. You know, these osprey mate for life. And to see them come back, God knows where they go. And they leave, like, Labor Day every year. And then, you know, I pray that they come back again this year. But if they have kids again, to track them similarly to, you know, a couple of times throughout the summer.
Yeah, you know what?
It's beautiful.
So is it your relative that has the house that overlooks the
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
Eleanor McKechnie. We can probably get you access there. She may have said no.
No, she said yes.
Oh,
she
good.
and her husband, I guess, was her husband.
Significant other.
Allow me to come and photograph from up there and then the osprey that year were disappeared or were taken out by
wasn't there a certain guy that was building
he built a second one.
They haven't hooked on. It might be too close to the other one, but they've got permission from the friend family to put it on their marshland, and supposedly the boundary of the creek that's right there is enough of a bound, because they're very territorial.
Right.
But I think it's too close, but it's been two seasons and the other osprey nest hasn't been used yet. Although this past fall, before they left, they were landing on it.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
Because
it's a bigger platform. And so the osprey every year they add more and more sticks and things like that. So if you've ever seen an osprey nest, like some of them are like, 30 feet wide.
Oh, really?
God. They can be like a tower, huge. Absolutely.
If I was the osprey, I would take the new one. The new one's deeper.
It's bigger and better.
And, you know, it could be a much bigger house over time.
I'll take your card.
Mm-hmm.
When I go to Naples, and we go up to Marco, that like every single marker in the middle of the channel pole. Has an osprey nest. And you see them all the whole way. It's like one to the next one, you see osprey.
Oh, so
there's
awesome.
A lot of them there.
Wow.
Right.
So awesome.
So that bird has a pretty wide range, I guess, huh?
Oh, huge territory, yes. Yeah. I mean, because they're not just North American either. The nest that I saw that I was just telling you about is like in Egypt.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't get
Are they the fastest raptor?
You're thinking about peregrine falcons.
Peregrine falcons, sorry.
You're thinking about peregrine falcons.
They're pretty quick, though.
Yeah, they're fast.
And they fish right on the Anasquam River. They come down and hit a pogie or something.
Right. And you can see
the
big fishes.
And the kids are all excited. It's like, feeding time.
Yeah.
And
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you have a card?
There's Beauport Financial. He's not that hard to find.
Right, yeah. Right from Blackburn Park.
Yeah.
So I have one other plug.
Yep.
So the rumor is that there's actually a closing date with this consortium of the YMCA and Wendover Corporation, and I'm forgetting the Dolben Company and Sam Park, that they're actually going to close on this project up at the Fuller School site, and that, you know, construction will start to happen on a brand new YMCA. My wife and I are chairing that campaign. The public phase of it will start to launch this spring for the community to be involved in. We're $17 million. We've got to get to $22 million. It's actually going to be more like $30 million Y. The North Shore Y will take on some debt and grab, you know, some grant funds where they can. But it's going to be a beautiful facility when it's done. And
every new YMCA awesome. That they've built in the past 15 years has been like state of the art, like ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
And the cost to join YMCAs are not very expensive.
I think I just passed one of those giant new YMCAs the other day.
Beverly has a gorgeous one. Ipswich has a gorgeous one.
And the parking lot was packed.
People are using them.
Yeah, so this would be great. We'll double our youth programs and things like that just because we'll have moms. I mean, I was at the Y this morning and I watched a young mother, you know, pull over next to the temple, you know, kitty corner parked, looking both ways, coming across the street with her little one. And it's just not a practical place to, you know, there'll be a
the amount of parking spots that it takes up downtown.
There'll be a drop-off place for people to pull in with their kids. Yeah. It'll be safe. There'll be plenty of parking, and it's going to be cool.
The part that I love about the whole project is the residential part, actually. Mm-hmm. And the reason I like that is because I feel like there's so many older folks, like my mom, that have houses that they don't necessarily need
and don't want to take care of anymore
and would love to be able to take the money from their house and to be able to live and downsize,
walk to the grocery store, get some other, you know, you got Home Goods going in now, you can
you could furnish your whole new apartment.
There you go.
It's the perfect type of living space for older folks, in my opinion, anyway.
10 years in the making. Looks like it's going to happen. We have enough revenue, enough assets raised to move ahead with construction on our end. And,
that's great news.
It's going to be exciting for the city.
That's awesome. Well, Dave, thank you so much for coming in.
Awesome.
Do you have a website?
We do. It's BeauportFinancialServices.com.
BeauportFinancialServices.com. If you're unhappy or if you're just getting started or if you just want someone that you can trust to run things by, my gold seal of approval to Beauport Financial, Dave and his whole team, professional, honest, hardworking, caring.
Good tip.
There's not enough adjectives. I could be here all day long with great adjectives, but I thank you what he's done for our family, and I know that you'd be happy if he did work for you.
Let me tell you how great these people are. Dave's partner saved us this past summer off of the Anisquam River. We beached our boat. I'm a first-time boater. So that will never happen again. And Dave's partner saw us waving him down.
Floundering.
And he rescued, how many of us? Five?
Seven. Five to seven.
Of six. And took us back to mile marker. And we had to go get the boat the next morning. But he
was a
hero.
A beacon in his store.
In my mind. I had no idea who he was. We got on the boat. We started chatting. And course, I said, well, do you know Joe Shimitaro? And he started laughing. He goes, yeah, Joe is a client of mine. I'm like, holy shit. So it's a small world. But not only do they do a good job at managing money, but they also
save people,
help stranded boaters.
Save people from themselves.
That's ultimately what they do.
That's the bottom line of
it. That's exactly. A perfect juxtaposition.
Yeah. Kevin Blinky from Detroit, Michigan.
Kevin, that's right, Kevin.
Yeah. Landlubber saved you. Yeah. Congratulations. Yeah. Thanks for coming in. Great. Appreciate it.
So I just wanted to start off with a quick question about the Osprey. So what does it take to get one of those nests, like the pole nest or the...
What does it take to get built?
The stand that they build their nest on.
So Greenbelt is the one who's been installing the nests around here.
Right.
And so you have to get permission from the, if it's not on Greenbelt property, you have to get permission from the people.
Yeah. He lives on the Aswan, that's why.
Oh,
yeah. Because I would love one outside of my house.
I know who you should talk to.
On the marsh, yeah.
Yeah, Dave Rimmer. Okay. He's the guy who helps us with the piping plovers from Greenbelt. Yeah. He's the one who installed the ones in at Dave's.
Yeah.
And he's also, his main special thing is the ospreys.
Really?
Yes. So you want to talk to Dave Rimmer about getting one.
Okay.
Next time you talk to him, just mention to him. He lives on, what's it called? Something?
Little Point? River.
No, but what's the point?
Stanwood Point.
Stanwood Point. Right across from Nichols Candy at the end of Woodward Ave.
Yeah, well, that's a perfect spot for
it. Little River, Stanwood Point.
Yeah.
At the end of Nichols. Oh, I know where that
Not
is.
Not Nichols, on the opposite side.
Of the candy.
Okay.
Yeah.
You look out at the candies?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Because he'd probably come and do a site thing and say, say if this is a good location or not. But is there any osprey nests around you?
The one that Dave was referencing is further down the river.
Further down?
No, I mean, it's not much further, but
it's down and around the corner. It's on the other side of the railroad bridge.
No.
You're on the same side of the railroad bridge?
Yeah, I'm on the same side of the railroad bridge.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but they just built one. The second one that he was just describing that his aunt's significant other built is relatively close to the one that's there now. Have you noticed that there's two there now? One much bigger and one smaller.
I haven't noticed that.
But anyways, Dave will come and look at it. And if it's, you know,
Near the house that has the three painted frog rocks?
If you go
the big yellow house on the corner there when you're going. No. You know the painted frog rocks I'm talking about?
Mm-mm. If you know where that variety store is on Washington Street, right? The variety store on Washington Street.
No.
If you drive down there,
no.
is that what you're talking about?
What?
Anyways.
What I'm talking about? There's the famous fog rocks on Anasquam River. Hold on. I'm looking. As I type.
Frog.
Hasty's Frogs, it's called. The lady painted them.
Oh, somebody.
Dang it. All right, never mind. We'll move on.
All right. Anyway, very exciting that we met somebody who's involved with the ospreys.
Yeah.
But,
Pisces, this is big news. Yeah. Pisces has been a member of our downtown community for many, many years.
Right.
I would say at least 20, but I'm not positive.
Wow.
Okay? They're having a 50% off sale. And
when does that start?
I guess it's already
till the
started.
The end of the month, I believe.
It's a closing.
It says we are truly grateful for your business, friendship, and support over the past 17 years. We will miss you. Gift certificates must be redeemed by 1/30/19. All sales are final. 50% off store wide closing sale.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they're closing.
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that.
Wow.
Yeah, and
I've gotten a lot of nice gifts from my mother-in-law there.
That for many, many years was my go-to last-minute gift place. You could always find something there.
Something.
And I think a lot of people felt the same way. Yeah. Now, my guess is, with Design of Mine,
right, and then
Brass Monkey,
yeah,
and what's the other one that's next to Design of Mine?
Dove and Rose.
Yeah,
something.
Mia
something
worked
like
there.
Fig and Rose.
The name is escaping me.
Duck and Rose.
Mia worked there
Rose and
a few
something.
Times this past summer.
Anyway, there's four stores where there used to be, four gift shops where there used to be kind of one.
Yeah.
All within a block.
Right.
And then you also have Home Goods coming, which, people can go to Home Goods.
Right.
I think the writing was on the wall.
About the tourists, I mean, if I'm coming to Gloucester, I'm not going to Home Depot.
Home Goods.
I want to walk up and down the downtown area.
I agree with you.
Right, because sometimes multiple gift shops can be a good thing.
I agree.
You know, because it just brings a bigger, larger group of people that are looking for things.
And I haven't found much overlap between them either.
I think most of the times those places...
There's a lot of overlap, you're right.
Most of the time those places will respect each other, and if they... They won't carry the same product. I remember when, who was that lady that, when I started the blog, Janice Lufkin Shea, had the Cormorant shop. And I remember her talking about there was an agreement among the retailers downtown not to carry the same type of things.
Yeah.
I think
that's
Bex
nice
wrote,
that they have a...
Bex wrote something on that, and I think Bex wrote that there was a raise, that the owner raised the rent.
Yeah, there was a big raise on
that. And that was part of it. Bex wrote something on that, and Bex knows a lot of the workers,
you know.
Well, rent to rent. You can't, like, I don't begrudge anyone. They own the place, they charge what they want to charge.
Lots of times they raise the rent, and then it sits empty.
Well, if it sits empty, then they have to lower the rent. But the market will find its way. And you can't, I think when you try to dictate, then things don't get, things end up worse. Chris had a topic, alcohol versus marijuana.
Yeah, this one is an interesting one. I got involved in a conversation yesterday with someone who was at a party. There was obviously alcohol at the party, and I guess there was an individual who took out their marijuana pen and started smoking it. And some people were offended by that.
Was that indoors?
That was indoors.
Marijuana pen indoors.
Yeah, but it was a vape pen.
Does that not make a smell in the house?
It really doesn't. I mean, maybe if you're standing right next to the person, but
it doesn't get into the. It wouldn't get into the furniture.
No, wouldn't get it. It's not like a cigar. It's not like a cigarette. It's literally vapor. Okay. So it disappears quickly and doesn't leave. I stink, but that's not the issue. The issue is that a number of people took offense to that, and with marijuana being legal now, what is the big deal if you're at a party and someone's drinking beer, which is a drug,
right?
Or they go to their vape pen, and even if they walk away and go in the corner, why should that person be looked at differently than the person who's on his sixth or seventh vodka drink?
Well, don't you think it's kind of up to the host or hostess?
Yeah, I mean, you have to be respectful of that. Yeah. But that aside, let's say everyone's...
So was the consternation about the fact that it was marijuana?
Yeah,
think that people, who grew up like, Jim and I did during an era when it was illegal and you didn't bring it out, you didn't talk about it, you didn't, for us that adjustment is a little...
Jarring?
Freeing, yeah. but jarring. Yeah. And so sometimes you just don't shake those standards you have in your head that you grew up with, even though times around you are
no,
changing.
I couldn't agree with you more. I sit in my house and have a beer with my daughter and kids there.
Yeah, but you probably
I couldn't
wouldn't
see
too.
Taking out a vape pen and smoking vape.
Right.
But yet,
they're
both drugs.
They're both
legal. Mm-hmm. I found the conversation to be interesting.
Right, it's an adjustment that I think a lot of people are going to have to make.
Yeah,
don't you think?
It's obviously you're exactly right. It is sort of jarring. Even to me, it's not jarring now, but the first couple of times I saw someone take out a vape pen, like sort of in public. you know what I mean? I'm like, my eyes kind of got big, but very quickly for me, you have to understand that this is just what's interesting to me is I know some police officers, and speaking to them off the record, they they do not have mechanisms.
Yeah.
Right.
Like for testing
people. Like what I continue to hear from them is. Someone can drink a couple of beers and be arrested, and conversely, can get completely whacked out of their mind on our marijuana, and there is no mechanism.
Right. That is a problem.
To stop them or arrest them or anything like that for driving impaired. Because they are impaired.
Right. I see. I think that is a huge, I think this is where our local legislation really dropped the ball, because they've known for like 3 years that this was coming, and even longer. I mean, 5 years ago, you could say that this was coming down the pike.
You know why they've dropped the ball? Take a guess why.
Well, no.
Take a guess why.
I mean, I think things are very difficult to get done.
Do you think it's difficult, or they don't want to touch it because they know it's going to be an unpopular thing? Because the stoners and the people that do want to get, I shouldn't even say stoners because that's a negative connotation.
Right,
but the people that really are embracing marijuana or that use of marijuana for good or bad the politicians know it's going to be a hot button topic, and if there's people on the that absolutely do not want it, super conservative folks that. Do not want it, and they don't. So there's no incentive for them to jump in the fray. It's like the nail that's sticking up.
Right.
What happens?
Plus
it gets hammered down, right?
How do you deal with that? What are the parameters? If you can't, you need to find a way to measure or determine and decide what are the parameters going to be.
Well, if there was money involved. For them, some lobbyist thing, they would jump in, right? Like if they could strong arm some pharmaceutical companies out of billions of dollars, lobbying ways, then there's all kinds of legislation there, right?
Yeah.
But there's not going to be any legislation on that because there's no win yet. When there's a financial thing to tie it to, you'll see how quickly the legislation gets enacted.
We host a couple of large family gatherings a year, annually, and I'm trying to picture one of. They're all family members,
right?
So
what if they?
Yeah, what? Because the day's coming.
The day
is coming.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah,
and I'm trying to picture what would my reaction.
What would your reaction be? And what would your other family members' reaction be?
Right, right.
Or like,
I can see your point where it's a game day. People are bringing the barbecue or hiring Chef Ralph, and this stuff to come in.
Yeah.
And people are bringing their, a bottle of wine or they're bringing their six pack and everything else, and they're carrying in. And somebody walks in with a whole thing of
vapes
going through. What does that look like for your house?
Kennel.
Somebody will turn around and say,
well, if somebody was...
What is Chris doing?
Yeah.
I can see that.
Well, again, that's, I think, another topic for discussion. But I'm just saying, all things being equal, that the host has said it was okay or, may smoke themselves or doesn't see offense in that. Mm-hmm. Again, just... I
think it's funny that I see some.
It's
weed.
Interesting.
I think it's funny that I see some people in their early 60s and stuff like that that are openly talking about smoking pot.
Yeah.
Whereas 3 years ago,
I
never would have known these people smoked pot, and now they're just freely talking
about
it.
Think about when we grew up,
right? Because they've had to be in the closet for so long.
Yeah. It's almost
these are some pretty conservative people that I know,
and also
they're like.
People are just loving that you can use it medicinally. You know what I mean? Instead of having to, get a prescription drug, you can.
I see it's very similar to the LGBTQ movement, a few years ago. I mean,
right?
There are people who are coming out more comfortably now, and it's more accepted.
It's more accepted.
And that took time.
Yeah,
I think.
Yes, it takes time.
Now we have our first openly LGBTQ. Senator, right?
Who's that?
Isn't the senator from California?
No. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So here's an interesting topic to me that Kate brought to the table this morning. Herring, a big staple, probably the highest volume fish that gets landed in this port by many times over is herring.
Okay.
They use farts to communicate with one another. Did you know this?
I did. Well, not until I saw your headline. I didn't have a chance to read the article, or it looks like
it's
a
super
video.
Interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So here's the
fact. Is it the sound? Is it the...
Well, I'm going to read. I'm going to read from the article that
probably
was...
Probably the smell.
This is on the Huffington Post. apparently, some types of herring do pass gas to speak to each other without alerting other fish. So this is a way to speak to the other fish
other
if there's predator and stuff. Wow. A 2003 study revealed the findings, but we're just herring about it now.
Terrible pun.
The men named the phenomenon fast repetitive tick, or RFT. The noise sounds like someone blowing a high-pitched raspberry. Robert Batty, senior research scientist at the Scottish Association for Marine Science in Oban, told National Geographic. However, the gas is not caused by the digestive process. Instead, the fish swallow air from the surface and emit it through small opening near their anuses. Thus, the farts aren't technically flatulence by its formal definition.
So they have a hole that's next to the anus, and they emit noise from that hole.
So it's not really a fart. When
the fish pass gas, the bubbles that emanate make a high-frequency sound only audible to the herring. The fish use the noise to form protective shoals at night to help them stay safe from predators.
I mean, that's what I do. That's what I do when I'm in bed with my wife.
With the blanket.
I fart to keep her away from me.
Protective shoal.
Yeah, create a protective shoal.
Wow.
So there's that.
Well, I guess that new phrase, I'll smell you later, really.
That's funny. Yeah. That's a good one. Well, you know, I think it's pretty popular in the... amongst Italians, where after a good meal you burp, that's a form of communication. Like, that was freaking outstanding.
I wonder if a blazing savage, a farting scene, you know, they're all...
I'm wondering what happened to make them study that in the first place. Like,
yeah.
What?
We should get this guy on.
Well, here's the thing. The headline came from the Huffington Post. I feel like the Huffington Post is all about just, you know...
Well, it attracts attention.
It's all clickbait. Thing.
Yeah, bright lights and sparkly gems.
National Choir for the news.
But
we have so you posted about Adventure Man.
Mm-hmm, I did, yeah.
Who is basically running all the way from way up north Washington State.
Yes, down
the coast of California, across
the
Texas, and then up the East Coast.
And up the East Coast.
Is he in Georgia now or something?
He's in South Carolina.
South Carolina.
So I want to read the...
Excuse me, I'm so sorry.
Kim is dying. We're going to have to call 911 in a second for Kim.
I almost fainted coming in. I'm like,
really?
Well, cold.
We all almost faint.
What a trooper.
We all almost faint coming in here.
Yeah.
Her eyes are running. Her nose is running.
She's crying.
She can't breathe.
She's crying.
I can't breathe.
And yet she's here.
It's the worst.
Contributing.
I know it's the worst. Did you go get the Adele's gumbo?
No, I didn't.
You failed me. Okay. So anyway...
What are you selling? Your Mexican drugs?
This guy, no, Adele's gumbo.
Adele's gumbo.
The gumbo at passports. So, Adventure Man. This is. I'm going to read what he had to say. He goes, I have just hit my 13th state, Georgia, as I make my way up the Northeast into the Atlantic Ocean. 9 months since first putting my hand in the Pacific in Washington State, and all that running has given me time to think. Instead of finishing my trek at West Quoddy Head Lighthouse, which is way, way up in Maine, I'm now going to be finishing in Gloucester, Massachusetts. I know what you're thinking. Why? And he lists his answers why he's going to finish in Gloucester. Mm-hmm. There's more money has been donated as a result of me live streaming than any other way of sharing the journey, and after all, that's what this is all about. I want to live stream the finish, and, well, I've recently found out there will likely be no signal in that area of Maine.
Hmm.
That's a huge downside for me and the difference we could make. You and the support you show by watching, sharing, and donating is everything. As the new finishing spot is just east of Boston and not in the back end of nowhere like the lighthouse, it's easier for my family, friends, and supporters to fly in and run with me for the last few days or so. Did anyone notice anything about the name of the town that I'm finishing in? That's right. It's the same name as my hometown, Gloucester. And there's a reason that's important that I'll get to in a second. It's 35 miles away from Boston Children's Hospital, one of the biggest kids' hospitals in the world, will be the final hospital that I visit in the U.S., and I'd love the inspiration from that visit to be one of the last things I do on the run. So that's
it. Very exciting.
That's it.
I did reach out to him, to his group, or him, asked, you know, to stay in touch and say we'd love to be a part of your event here, and perhaps we can, we'll be covering it, and you know, we'd like to hear from you if you have a chance. So we'll hope to hear from him. I'm picturing he's, I don't know where he'll go. If he wanted to go out to a lighthouse, I was trying to picture where did I think he would end this here in the city. I mean, where would it be? And at first I thought this, you know, man at the wheel. Yeah, but then if he wants lighthouse, maybe he'll run out.
I don't think he necessarily wanted lighthouse.
Oh, okay. Just that it was symbolic. Well, then I don't know.
It would be,
I don't know what he's thinking.
If he wants to discuss it, that is, there's limited parking out there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
At the lighthouse.
Well, right, and it wouldn't be
safe. Oh, at the lighthouse, for sure. Yeah,
and
we don't want
it safe
for the butterflies. Yeah, we don't want to disturb the butterfly habitat.
They're not there anyway.
Or the piping plovers.
But no, but they're not there that time of year. But also, there is limited parking lot. It's very it's restricted by Mass Audubon.
The people that let Kim go and use their property down on Eastern Point would be upset if she encouraged people to go
down there.
Mass Audubon people.
I'm thinking about the people that coming, cause
yeah, and if it's a right, you want,
there are much better places. I agree 100%.
Where, the man at the stand,
I think the man at the wheel would be a great place because they can
also last year at this time that was totally washed out. There was no parking lot, there was
that's
no place
true.
To park down there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was looked like a war zone down there. So he was
afraid that some of his supporters who had pledged money for a certain mile long journey to Maine would be disappointed or upset because they had pledged this money and his journey was going to be however many miles shorter. And that was a concern that he had, but apparently he was able to come to
terms with that,
and his supporters seemed to agree that that's a good idea. So
I could see, and I'm not speaking for the mayor, but I could see Safatia doing something really great for him.
Oh yeah.
You know, like,
I got news for you. If I was a marching band director up here, I'd bring the band out. I would.
This is just up to five.
Parade them in.
Oh, this is right in her wheelhouse.
Right.
I mean, she loves
helping
people,
kids,
hospitals, everything. It's right in her wheelhouse. So
I'm going to reach out to her.
Reach out to her.
Yeah.
We want him on the podcast.
Yeah.
And it'd be great to be there when he's. You know, we're going to do updates every week. And, and Pat said she would do these updates and tell us where he is each week.
And it might be tight because I read somewhere that his 1-year visa ends in early April.
Oh.
So that's another thing. He's under a bit of a time constraint as well.
So he said he's from Gloucester. Is it Gloucester, England?
Yes, Gloucester, England.
Oh,
yeah.
I was going
to
say.
Yeah, sorry. We didn't get back to that. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool.
Very cool.
And his family can fly from Gloucester, England, to Boston a lot easier than getting to Maine. That was another one of his reasons.
Some podunk city
in
Maine.
Wants his family here.
Where they have inferior lobster trap trees.
My question is, why didn't he pick Gloucester initially?
Well, I don't know.
Tom wanted to take it corner to corner.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Possible.
Yeah, that's true. My bad. Strike that from the record.
Cape Ann Fresh Foods is closing for the winter. People probably don't know what Cape Ann Fresh Foods is. It's the place where Intershell had their little retail market across from Mom's Kitchen and Cape Ann Chamber of Commerce. Skip Montello is doing a program on photography at the Sawyer Free Library Saturday, January 19th from 2 to 4. Skip is a big-time FOB.
Yes.
Kim wanted to talk about Mr. Swan stuck in the ice.
Yeah, so...
tell me what... You reported, and then tell me, because there seemed to be some misrepresentation of what happened.
So I was told something, but who actually, so Mr. Swan was stuck in the ice over by Henry's Pond, and then what happened was, it was his actual caretakers, Joel and Skip Monroe, who were there, and they were the ones who called the fire department, because Skip knows somebody on the fire department, so that wasn't relayed to me, and what several people were concerned about was a couple years ago when Mr. Swan hurt his foot, there somebody called Mass Wildlife. And they put a big sign up and said, don't feed Mr. Swan for a few days. So this was somebody who didn't know anything about Mr. Swan or that this wasn't, this plan that they had dreamed up wasn't going to work. So that's what several of us were concerned about, is the local authorities, or the authorities beyond the state authorities, coming and trying to rescue Mr. Swan, which is nearly impossible. He won't let people capture him. It causes him 10 times more stress, and that isn't the way to handle any issue relating to Mr. Swan. His caretakers need to be notified. But this actually was Skip and Joel Monroe, who are super caretakers of Mr. Swan. So so I've been in contact with Joel, and, you know, everything.
Did he forgive you?
Yeah, she's a she.
Oh,
yeah,
Joel?
Joel, yeah, and her husband is Skip. And then there's another Skip. So that's the, those are Rockport caretakers. And then there's another Skip, Niles Pond, who also takes care of Mr. Swan. So
the Skip, inner circle.
Right, so Skip in, at Niles Pond is the one who can correctly identify how old he is. Uh-huh. Because Skip moved to Niles Pond in 1992. At that time, Mr. Swan was already there nesting and had a family of cygnets. So, and that was with Mr. Swan's first wife. So we know from that, from Skip arriving in 1992, that at the bare minimum, Mr. Swan was 2 years old, probably more like three or four, at the bare minimum, because they need to be 3 or 4 years old to
before
breathe.
Before they can breathe.
So that's how we know Mr. Swan is at the bare minimum 29 years old.
Jesus.
Which is really
remarkable.
Phenomenal. It's remarkable.
Because hasn't there been like people that say that the average life expectancy of a swan is much less?
It's 8 to 9 years in the wild. That's a, like Mr. Swan is considered in the wild. He's
How is he considered in the wild if people feed him?
Well,
like he goes from place to place where he's getting hand fed.
Well, people feed. I mean, he's just surviving on his wits. I mean, he made all these people feed him. You know what I mean? Like
if people weren't feeding him, would he last this long?
Yes, he very well could, because of how he has altered his life. Like he's only at freshwater ponds in the summertime, but then he moves to saltwater where he has access to food. He eats seaweed, and so it's unlikely, but he could actually. But the thing is, in the wild, they live on average 8 to 9 years. The queen swans, who are well taken care of, even they don't usually live till 30 years old. You know what I mean? Like, they can live. I think the oldest one was 40 years old. But, you know, he's really just living. They're taken care of. The queen swans in England are, you know, it's a crime to do anything to harm them. and they're beautifully taken care of.
Yeah.
They're more like pets.
Right. Well, that's what I was saying. Like, if
Mr.
you say
Swan
it's if it's living in the wild, but like it gets rescued by humans all the time and it gets fed by humans.
Well, he's never been caught. You're talking about the young swan that was rescued and stayed at Lynn's house. Mr. Swan has never been caught. Never.
Okay.
He's super smart, super wily. He knows how to escape.
Wily.
But he has, you know, we think he was attacked by a snapping turtle. He's crash landed on a roof. You know, he's had a lot of
full life.
He's had a very full life.
Who's the guy? Who's the writer? The crazy writer that did that.
Up in Maine.
No, the writer that did
Alfred Hitchcock.
No, with the fish, the big
Hemingway.
Tuna. Hemingway. He's like the Ernest Hemingway of swans.
Yeah.
The man.
Well,
the man in the sea. Or what was
the
it?
Old
the
man.
Old
man. In the sea.
Man in the sea.
Didn't we have to read that in high school?
Yeah, you probably did.
I think so.
I'm doing
a lot of
piping plover research right now, and believe it or not, there is a piping plover that is 15 years old.
Whoa.
That has been coming to the same exact beach for 15 years.
That's remarkable.
So, isn't that amazing? I'll tell you more about it.
And how do you know that? Do they tag him?
He's tagged.
Oh.
So he was tagged where he was born, and then at the site where he was born, and then he's, you know, recorded every year at the exact same nesting site with a nest just a mere feet away every year. And now he lost a foot.
Oh.
And so he has this, he has this little footprint that's like a piping plover footprint and then a peg. A piping plover footprint.
Oh, wow,
that's cool.
Oh, he just lost his foot, not
his
leg.
Not his leg.
Oh, my God, that's great.
He's a peg-like
He's a peg leg. That is cool. I want to meet this guy.
Me too.
Staying on the bird theme for one sec. I challenged Joe this morning, and he knew the answer to this.
Kim will know this. I only know this because I know this because of Kim. Yeah.
All right.
What's a gaggle of
a flock.
What's a bunch of crows together? What are they called?
A gaggle, a murder.
Murder. Yes.
Yeah. A murder.
That was his.
But you know what? That is only something that if you actually use that with ornithologists, they'll just look at you like you're funny because it's only used in like Edgar Allan Poe used the term.
It's on Modern Family. That's
where everything has to start. Everything has to start somewhere.
It has to start.
And who do you go to? A hornologist?
Ornithologist.
Horniologist.
Chris does not need any help with the horniologist.
An ornithologist.
24/7 horniologist.
Somebody studies birds. That's what an ornithologist does.
A what? Chinese? Oh, a study of birds.
Study birds is an ornithologist.
Ornithologist.
Interesting.
Not horno.
Sticking on the theme of pets. Moving away from birds.
Did your dog still die yet? Or no.
No. This is the big test. It is the last, like, 3 or 4 days of her taking her medication.
Oh.
So this will be the big test once she's sort of off it, whether that has helped the disc problem that she was having. So
I hope it doesn't die. I don't want. I don't want it to die.
No. Well, if it doesn't die, Joe, I'm bringing her over your house, and I'm going to have her eat you alive. How's that?
Well, what kind of dog is she?
She's a mutt.
A mutt,
I saved her from a rescue.
Northeast Savage. Is she cute and little? Is that why he's saying she's savage?
Not a little.
45 pounds.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but nice as can be.
If you could picture him as a dog, that would be what this dog looks like.
I'm sure you've seen those things like on Facebook.
Show her a picture of your dog and tell me the dog doesn't look like him.
Their dog.
Show her the picture.
I'll show a picture after.
Scruffy. Salt and pepper hair.
Tight haired dog, not scruffy. Joe, I'm telling you, I'm bringing her up here. She's gonna bite you.
Descriptions are gonna vary greatly between.
Every time I go, I look in the window. He's got the raw meat, and he's dangling the raw meat. He's got her on the chain, and the dog runs to the meat, and he pulls the meat away, and the dog gets right by the neck until the dog can't take it anymore, and then he feeds the dog the meat.
That's a sad image.
He's a breeder for Michael Vick.
Yeah, me and Michael Vick. So, Switzerland, are they the ones who zap lobsters or was that Sweden?
Sweden.
Was it Switzerland?
Lobsters. No.
All right. I don't know. But another European country I read, speaking of animals, it's against the law to own only one guinea pig. Because they're social animals, they...
This is a law?
I swear to God, yeah. Are you serious with some of these countries? You have to own more than one guinea pig if you live in Switzerland.
I'd be interested to hear what their policies were on homelessness and...
I don't think they have that in Switzerland.
You know, if they're concerned about animals and their social life...
Yeah,
that you know, they need people a
mate. They need someone
cruel.
To interact
it's, otherwise
with.
Otherwise it's cruel.
Yeah.
See, I called that news that you're doing, you know, people listen to NPR.
That's the HuffPost
I call it the
GMT.
CPR.
CPR, of course. Yes.
The CPR news.
Yeah. But, you know, that brings up a good point because, you know, I grew up with some guys and women who are the only child in the family. And some,
right.
I think, would argue that that's unfair to only have one child that you must multiply. And have more than one, so there's
Do you have any siblings?
I do. I have two others.
Yeah.
So I wasn't one of them. I mean, I'm not agreeing or disagreeing with the one child theory.
Right.
But I think China may have gotten it wrong.
Right. Well, I think they're seeing that now because they don't have enough brides for the men.
Yeah.
Because they shipped them all over here.
Because the,
Or no, it's
did,
true.
Other,
yeah.
or did other things.
Well, there's a disproportionate amount of men to women in China?
Because of the one child.
Because in China, it's...
Would they allow you to have an abortion if you had a girl but not a boy?
And the abortions were forced if you had more than one child. If you had more than one child...
Well, you know what they say. One son...
What do they say?
One father can support 10 sons, but 10 sons can't support one father. Did they ever say? They ever hear that?
I never heard that one. But it is a very ancient Chinese custom to prefer men over mm-hmm. girls, and that's why they either aborted them or put them up for adoption.
Evil men. There you go.
No, that one.
Phyllis A. fundraiser. The Phyllis A. is having a fundraiser?
They're trying to raise $200,000 this year because it's a perpetual problem. And Doug Parsons at least wants to get it into the water this year. So they're having a big push. One of the first things that they're doing is that they're having they're collecting stories about the Michigan Bears, which were the gillnetter fishermen that originally
the Dahmer family mm-hmm. and the Arnold family.
Right. So they're having an event.
They've been feverishly keeping that legacy alive. The Hubbards, the Wansons, I think, they all came down from
Michigan. They crossed through the Great Lakes and Erie Canal, and they
landed in Gloucester, and they were like the first gillnetters amongst a huge dragger fleet.
Yeah.
They were like, you know, there was a handful of gillnetters, and they brought that way of life here. So they have a special place in the pantheons. If you counted the amount of fish that are landed by gillnetters in this city over the years compared to draggers, it's
disproportionately.
There's not as many, but they're, you know what, they should be proud of their heritage because they're all hardworking, great guys. Those Michigan Bears are hardworking, family oriented, great guys. Jeff Denoncourt is giving a talk at Cape Ann Museum on the ecology of Cranes Beach.
Yes, that's this Saturday at 3:00, and you have to go online to the Cape Ann Museum and register to get your tickets. But I'm excited because I've worked with Jeff before. He's a great guy, just bursting with information. He's the trustees. He works for the trustees, and he not only covers Cranes Beach, but many of the trustees' properties. And also he's just knows a lot about piping plovers and lease terns and nesting shorebirds. He was at the Cape Ann Coastal Waterbird Management meeting this summer, and it should be a really interesting talk.
All right, Lobster Bay, I think we're going to finish up right here. The Lobster Buoy Auction to benefit Cape Ann Art Haven is January 25th.
At 5:00.
For all the people that love that lobster trap tree, and I know every year it gets bigger and bigger, and there are people that come to our city to see that and spend money in our shops and everything.
Get their photo taken in front of it.
Kim did a piece about that, ongoing pieces about that. The 25th, January 25th, circle that on your calendar. They always have a great time, and they make it a family fun event.
Oh, it's a wonderful event. We should thank Cruiseport because they provide the venue, all the local restaurants that provide food for everybody. I mean, it's just it's a wonderful night.
It really is. Yeah. It really is. All right, guys, that is GloucesterCast 317. It's in the books. Right. We had a one podcast virgin, David McKechnie, today.
Yeah.
And it was filled with some great news, I think.
Lots of valuable stuff today.
And Adam Kukuru.
And what they're doing for the Coast Guard. Thanks, guys. Have a great day. Mm-hmm.